Yeah.
Bo Hess.
And now, the end is near.
Bo.
Felger and Mass.
98.5.
The Sports Hub.
Can he avoid sharding on the field there in Minneapolis in this game? Can he avoid brain locking like Dan Quinn or losing his mind like Pete Carroll? Will he have his team ready to go and do the right things, unlike Mike Tomlin? Can he go four quarters, unlike Doug Marrone, who couldn't, whose game plan seemed to run out somewhere early in the fourth? Can he avoid all of those things? Because ultimately, you could say that the coach was the difference in all those games I just mentioned. Honestly.
Well, it's such a huge factor. I mean, like, you know, I don't put Marrone on the list. I don't. I just look at it because I think you could argue with Marrone. He had to dumb it down. He has no quarterback.
Their game plan gave him a chance to win, right? And so but it actually cut both ways because I think actually the way the Jacksonville ran their offense there in the fourth quarter killed him. They ran out of game plan. They just started handing it off to Leonard Fournette. After all these great rollouts and boots and play actions and all these little plays that they had to get Blake Bortles off, they sort of all of a sudden started handing off and put him in second long every drive like that. That was coaching.
I know. I just think that, like, to me, this becomes a discussion about the team that has you and lets you get away. Like, you know, Seattle,
Atlanta. Jacksonville had you and let you get away.
Not as much.
No, of course not as much. Oh, my God. I mean, no one did it as much as Atlanta or Seattle. Those are epic. But Jacksonville had a 10-point lead and the ball in the fourth quarter.
But the other teams had double-digit leads, the ball, and talent. Particularly on offense or quarterback. Like, to me, with regard to Peterson, I don't know. I mean, to ask anybody to, like, outmaneuver Belichick at the end of the game, I think is impossible. I just don't think it's going
to
happen.
So let me rephrase that. I'm not even asking him to outmaneuver Belichick.
Right, just don't screw up.
Just, I assume he can come in with a good game plan. Dan Quinn did. Doug Marrone did. But they couldn't. They couldn't keep it going all game, and when they had to adjust and make it, you know, and sort of reset the game at the end of the game, Doug Marrone fresh ran out of ideas, and Pete Carroll lost his mind. They couldn't keep it together, and Dan Quinn lost his mind, couldn't keep it together. I'm not expecting Peterson to outmaneuver Bill, but can he just hold his water for 60 minutes?
Probably not.
I don't know. I have no faith that he can do it.
I doubt it.
He's coached two playoff games. The one last week was a complete blowout where he had to make virtually no in-game decisions. The week before against Atlanta, I want to go back and look at and see how he handled the clock and the pressure and all of that. I want to see that. But that's really the only application he has for this game coming up in Minneapolis. You know, he's a first-time head coach in his second season. Before this, he was only a coordinator for 3 years and a quarterback coach for two. You know, and 9 years ago, he was coaching high school.
I look at this guy as the biggest red flag for this team.
I say, like, how can you possibly expect? Maybe he'll do it. Maybe he'll do it. But how do you expect? Like, how do you?
Oh, you can't. You can't
put it in the bank and say he'll be there with the right calls and the right decisions and a clear head in the fourth quarter of this game.
You can't. You there's no way you can do that. No, not in a million years. Like, you know, again, the moment in that game, it's unlike anything in sports. Everything else, when you get to the finals, is a series.
There's a high probability of a freakout factor.
Oh, absolutely. Just the nature of the sport, the buildup to the game, all of it.
So this is why I add the two things together, the one we didn't want to talk about, the backup quarterback. But, you know, a backup quarterback has never won the Super Bowl truly like Nick Foles is proposing to do, other than Jeff Hostetler. Behind a first-time, second-year coach who was coach in high school 9 years ago, that's how the Pats are going to lose? I just don't feel it. I don't see it. And so you can throw Fletcher Cox and their defensive line rotation and how they match up on D and throw whatever you want at me on the field as it relates to the Eagles. I just put those two things together and say, Foles winning is almost unprecedented. And Peterson in his first real crack at this is going to be the one to do it. Like, yeah. I don't think so.
So in this way, because look, I think there's every chance, I told you this earlier, that I think Jim Schwartz could be a huge Achilles for Philadelphia in this
thing.
And
then there's a D quarter Jim Schwartz who wants to prove his manhood with every call, and who Bill knows, who Bill mentored, who Bill developed. Bill knows what Jim Schwartz is going to do before Jim Schwartz does it.
See, and this is part of what I mean about that comment with Peterson. When Peterson says, we just worry about us. Don't you think Bill looks at Jim Schwartz and says, I know how that guy's going to act, and we're going to use it against him?
Yes, absolutely.
Right, so that's what I mean about understanding, too, what the other side does. But my question with Schwartz is, he does know Belichick's methods, right? He does understand Belichick. Can that part help them? Like, can it,
yes, it can.
So, like, can he somehow emphasize to Peterson, hey, look, they're going to have something in the fourth quarter that we haven't seen yet. We got to be ready for it. Like, I don't know. I respect the team Philly's got, though, I'll tell you that. Between the defensive line, the pass catchers they have on offense, and including the tight end in the backfield, you know, the play calling that people like Bedard tell me about and what Peterson's good at. The kicker's got a big leg. He had a 62-yarder early in the year. You know,
he's that rookie kicker, right?
Yeah, Hancock. Yeah.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
Yeah. So like, or Elliott, rather. So the I look at some of that and say, there's a team there. I mean, there's no question. There's a team, and they get some of the elements that give the Patriots trouble. The stuff you're talking about, if it's a close game late, who do I like? I mean, how do you like anybody but Belichick and Brady?
And how can it not be a close game late? If you're not blowing them out, which is possible, you think you're going to get blown out?
No.
So it's a virtual guarantee you are either blowing them out or it's a one-possession game in the fourth.
Mike, there's only one guy who really, and you made a good point earlier, and I think if you think of it in these terms, right? But Belichick doesn't lose to bad coaches. He doesn't.
He loses to bad quarterbacks. This is what I said earlier, that there's lots of precedent for the Patriots to losing to quarterbacks that they really shouldn't lose to. Mark Sanchez.
Flacco.
Brian Greasy, was it that? Or is that Jake
Plummer?
Plummer
was Jake Plummer.
Here in Denver. We're missing a big one. Peyton Manning at the end.
I mean, they almost lost to Bortles.
Okay, so there is precedent for them losing to bad quarterbacks.
Eli, that first one.
I thought Eli sucked in that 07 Super Bowl. I do. I agree with you. They've lost to bad quarterbacks. That's happened. How many bad coaches have they lost to in a game that really matters?
Not many.
You know, Rex with the Jets there those first couple of years was pretty good. And Jim Harbaugh knows what he's doing. And
Rex as a defensive coach is good.
Okay, and he was. I mean, he was good for that time with the Jets. He just was. Kubiak and Wade Phillips have been around the block. Like, those were good coach. I don't know. How many? And Coughlin. Does Bill lose to bad coaches?
Well, see, so this brings me back to, like, the end of the game. At the end of the game, like, the nut cutting time, even Harbaugh's teams cracked. Coughlin's teams didn't. He's the only one. Coughlin's teams made plays at the end to beat you. Like, on more than one occasion, offensively or defensively, he's the only one I can look at and say at the end of the game, his team kept it together. They kept it together. Whether you blitzed Ellis Hobbs and they got a touchdown out of it, or, you know, they drive down the field and it was Ahmad Bradshaw, right, who stumbled into the end zone. Like, they won those games late. The Giants beat you late.
There's going to be a lot next week, a lot about Nick Foles. I think it's the coach. I think the coach is a bigger factor. And if Doug Peterson's the guy, then great. We don't know it, though. You can't possibly say that you have full confidence that he can do that and be that guy to make all those decisions and not just have his team ready to go, which he should, but have him ready to go for 60 minutes and know what it's going to take at these. And, you know, that it's going to be a game at the end. And is he and are all they ready? And I haven't seen anyone in the league who is. I don't see anyone else in the league who can do that.
I mean, it really is amazing, though. When you think of the games that the Patriots have lost in the postseason and their seasons, it's always a coach that has a clue. It's uncanny. I mean, it's always a coach that has a clue.
Maybe the exception is Dungy. I didn't love Dungy. I didn't think he was a great coach.
I mean, he had Manning, though. That's right. Almost like having a coach.
Well, but there you did lose to a quarterback. All I'm saying is, it's, you know, it's usually the coach, not the quarterback. So look at Peterson, not Foles.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Thanks for ending your workday with Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dumb move.
And streaming at CBSBostonSports.com.
Hey, yeah, Nick Foles was a starter, and he was a starter for Philadelphia. So is he still a true backup?
Yes. Yeah, he is. True backup.
Well, I mean, now, but he started 13 games for Philadelphia one year.
No, I mean, I hear you. So maybe you want to say that he is, in some circumstances, starting quality.
He's a good backup.
Yeah, say he's a good backup. But he was not going to sniff the field until the starter got hurt. That's what we're talking about. True backup. Maybe he's a good backup. I will say this again in our conversation, in just in this context, I give him a better chance of beating you than Doug Peterson, if you know what I mean. Like, because again, I've seen the Patriots lose to quarterbacks that normally you'd say they're not going to lose to. The coaches are a different story. It's usually someone good who beats Belichick in these kind of games. So I give Foles more of a chance than Peterson, if that means anything to you. John in the car. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. Early in the week, you had a panel there that never went to the Eagles Super Bowl with the Patriots in Jacksonville. I was fortunate enough to be with a company that I've got to see a lot of Super Bowls and World Series. And let me tell you, you call Bedard, tell him to get a pith helmet and an iron cup, because there's going to be stuff hurled at him that he's never seen before. Now, I played subdivision football. I'm a pretty big guy. I got up on a table mistakenly once at the team hotel and said, "Go Patriots." I had more glass flying at me than I'd ever seen before. These people are like the Brad Pitt movie Destination Z. They climb all over everything. They are just like locusts. They are the lowest living form, lower than Neanderthal.
It's the zombie apocalypse. I've ranted on Philadelphia fans many, many times.
They're a great description. They're like locusts.
It is. It is. And I was talking to a Philly talk show host last night on our social media little show that we do, and he's very defensive about Philly fans. In fact, there's a Philly, they think that they get this blanket rap about being bad fans, like Boston does about being racist, and like they've grown sensitive to it. Like, they think that people just automatically assume that Philly fans are Neanderthals because that's the reputation, but it's not true, and we're just saddled with this unfair reputation, and no one really knows the truth. Sort of like us and the race thing in Boston, but that's like that's become a thing there in Philly. And, I had to break it to this guy. I'm like, dude, Mike Missinelli, who's on our sister station there at Beasley Station in Philly, the Fanatic. I'm like, Mike, I covered the league for 9-10 years where I was on the road for, 10-12 weeks a year, whatever it was. I've been to every NFL city. I've been to every NFL stadium. I've been to 19 Super Bowls now. This is going to be 19 for me. So I have been with every fan base in every setting that you can imagine in this country. And there's only one time I thought that I was going to get hurt. And that's when I was in Jacksonville with you people in 2004. The only time I've ever felt the undercurrent of violence when I was at the old Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. So I've interacted with every fan base there is. And I'm not the only one. Anyone who covers the league would say the same thing. There's only one group of people that I get around that I feel like I might get hit over the back of the head with a metal chair. And that's when I'm around the Philly fans. And for anyone who was there in Jacksonville in 04, you know exactly what I mean. There was just this undercurrent of, like, every other fan base, you shout at each other, and you bark at each other, and you get mad. But I'm never with another fan base where I feel like it's, like, even the Steeler fan, who I think is a total goober and just a knuckle dragger, I don't feel it reaches the level of violence like I do the Philly fan. Even the Jet fan, that toothless moron that is the Jet fan, for the most part, I feel like you get out unscathed. The Philly fan, I think you always got to keep your head on a swivel.
And yeah, because a crime could be coming.
I feel like I'm going to get hurt. I feel like when you're interacting with a Philly fan, someone could get hurt. And I don't feel that about any other fan base.
I hosted a tournament for the Madden video game like 15, 16 years ago, and we traveled all over the country for it. A fight broke out only one place.
Philly.
Yep. Yeah, Philly.
I was going to say, even the virtual Philly fans are thug.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, about the only thing that I can give them credit for is the after they won the NFC Championship game, Millie, the 99-year-old fan, the Vikings fan. There was a couple of guys, there's a video going around that they have a big sheet that just says F Millie, which I can see the comedy in that. I found that very
punching
funny.
A horse.
No, twice.
Punching horses.
Police horses.
So I'm sorry, Philly. You want to be sensitive about it? You can't. It's real. Often stereotypes are based in reality, and yours is. You're different. You're worse. It's worse. And what's going to make this week scary is that I've told you that Minneapolis is an indoor city. They have skywalks and tunnels and malls, and everything's indoors. So there's
nowhere to run.
You can't. When we were in Jacksonville with these people, with these Neanderthals, you were out on the park. You were out on the river. You were outdoors. So you could flee. You could flee a situation. You could move on.
Worst case scenario, you could jump in the ocean.
You could swim. You could run to the other side of the street. You could get to the other side of the street and avoid the Philly fan.
Let's swim for it.
In Minneapolis, you're going to be in these skywalks and these tunnels and these indoor play. You're going to be nowhere to go. You're going to be cramped. You're going to be indoors, inside with these people. And it's going to be, it's...
And just the sounds of them. Not that we should probably talk, but that accent... Oh, I think that's the worst accent that you can find in America.
Least of their issues.
Water ice. Would you like a cup of water to go with that hoagie?
It's the least
it's
of their
a
issues.
Sub.
And we're going to be in the Mall of America with them. We're going to have to hide in the line at the China Garden.
Jim and Beverly. Go, Jim, on the Patriots.
Hey, Mike, you're starting to do it again. I brought it up with the Jags. This is a serious team. And I'll tell you, the biggest Achilles heel on this team in Mass, for once you might agree with me, are the Patriots linebackers. These linebackers suck. Eric Lee, God, that touchdown he gave up to Levy, now he, well, you're going to put him on Zach Ertz. And then you got a Landon Roberts and Marquise Flowers. They're just going to go with these guys all day and score at will.
Okay, so, Jim, unlike the Jags, I won't make the same mistake twice and totally overlook Philly to the point where I think it's going to be a layup. I don't. I respect Philly's ability to come in and give you a game and to exploit your holes, which you have. And they have some talented players, and so it's a game. They're not going to blow you out. So now I get to the point where it's a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. And now it's up to Peterson to manage the clock, use his timeouts properly, have the right game plan, because he's going to have to reset his game plan in the fourth, because the Patriots do. The Patriots are going to adjust to what's ever happened earlier on in the game. And if Brady's found his rhythm, look out. And so now what does Philly do? And I haven't seen, it's been now 3-4 years since I've seen anyone close you out. I mean, Denver did, obviously, that year in the AFC title game. But did they really? You were going for a two-point conversion to tie the ball game. So, you know, I guess Denver closed you out, but that by the skin of their teeth. You keep going and going. You never stop. You never stop. You don't run out of game plan. You don't run out of effort. You don't run out of conditioning. Everyone else seems to. So... In terms of my faith of the Eagles going all the way to the buzzer, I don't have much. Can they give you a game? Sure. Why not?
I mean, if they watch the AFC Championship game, they should know that they can attack that linebacking core.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the place to go. I think Jacksonville made that clear.
Okay, but then in the fourth quarter, handing off and, you know, so going up against the pass D-line versus their linebackers? Like, again, that's on the coaching staff.
Sure it is, yeah. I can't tell you what Peterson's going to do in the fourth quarter. I'm just telling you that... You know, I honestly, I'm not even sure Peterson's smart enough to attack the linebacking core. He might be one of these guys that, again, focuses on, let's just do what we do. We're going to start throwing out wide receivers and chucking the ball all over the field. When the reality is, if the Patriots can't defend it, keep doing it.
Here's Jay in Manchester. Tom V. Time. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, I just wanted to fire off two quick comments, and I'll hang up and listen. One, I was thinking Mike Holmgren. I don't know how removed he was from high school, but he coached high school and won a Super Bowl. And I would love to see the anti-hero documentary, QB7, Ben Roethlisberger, in comparison to Tom Brady, eating a cheeseburger for pregame preparation.
Right, exactly. Party like a champion today. A lot of these guys coached high school. That's not what I'm saying. Mike Holmgren also coached under Bill Walsh and was also a head coach for how many years before he won a Super Bowl? And that's all I'm saying. Was Mike Holmgren coaching high school 8 years before he was coaching the Super Bowl? Or 9 years? Doug Peterson, in 2008, was the head coach at Calvary Baptist Academy.
Powerhouse.
Where is that?
I don't know. Well, let's click on it. Calvary Baptist Academy is a private coeducational school located in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Big football state.
So he coached a team from 05 to 08. So it was 8-9 years ago he was coaching high school. Was Holmgren coaching high school 8-9 years before he was in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, but Felga, high school football in Louisiana is like college football in a lot of America.
This doesn't make Doug Peterson a bad coach. I'm just saying from a experience standpoint, holy moly, like that's a big leap. Mike Holmgren coached high school in 1975. Okay, so he was... Yeah, his last year as a high school coach was 1980. Okay? He took the Packers to the Super Bowl in 96. This is a little different.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. It's Felger and Maz. Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Let's go! Boom!
Well, the Patriots season opener coming up. We're just hours away. And one guy that the Chiefs certainly are scouting is Tom Brady, who is 40. Yes, he is 4-0. So the question is, can he continue the pace now that he's officially over the hill? How much time left for Brady?
If he slips or doesn't look the same way coming out of the gate in 2017, what are we talking about? Brady, I think, is different. We all consider him to be different. But when you hit that age, there's a reason why people have preconceived notions about it.
You got to block out the noise because none of that's going to help you win. What motivates me is I could have, should have done better.
I'm so tired of the Brady bullcrap when it comes to, you know, how he motivates himself, what his energy's like, his warrior spirit, all of it. I told you, I watched the thing. The first half of it I found entertaining today. It was good. I like the inside stuff. I like seeing him pull out some notes from a meeting and Belichick going into the Super Bowl and reading his notes as to what the message was and the themes were from Belichick. That stuff I like. Taking the letter that he received out about the suspension from the NFL. I like that.
How about his answer there?
I hate it. I just think Brady, to me, is bought into his own bullcrap. That's the part that drives me crazy.
So what just stands out there to me is that it's disingenuous. He's playing cuts of guys talking about, ooh, he's 40. And then they cut to him. He says, yeah, I don't listen to that stuff. Well, you just put it in your documentary. What's if that's not in your thought process, if that's not what motivates you, if that's not something you hear or ingest in any way, shape, or form, why are you putting your documentary and doing a whole segment on it? That's of course you hear it. You should hear it, and it should motivate you. I mean, if I'm him, I'd start with the coach. You know, Beadle and Sarge aren't the ones that drafted Jimmy Garoppolo when Brady turned 37. That was your coach. So if I'm Brady, I'm motivated by the fact Belichick thought I wouldn't be going at 40. And if I ever hear it, if I hear it on the radio, if I hear it on the street, if I hear it wherever, that's going to motivate. You don't think I can play to 40? I'll show you. Of course he's motivated. Why? But he can't admit it. You don't want to admit it because you don't want to admit that you listen to the people or that, or this BS higher calling thing. Like, it's all self, it's all what's inside. It's not what anyone else says. And oh, by the way, what's wrong with being motivated by what other people say? That's what motivates most people. You think I can't do it? I'll show you. What's so wrong? But is that just too base? Is that too base and too bourgeois of a sort of emotion for Brady to, you know, it's got to be some sort of higher calling, some sort of inner thing that he's drawing from, not just standard variety, I'll show you?
Maybe. I mean, considering everything else that's going on with the TB12 method and how high and mighty it comes off as, maybe that's...
My only motivation comes from within. Come on.
No, he's a Zen master. That's what he is. I told you, I love the comment, too, from Alex Guerrero on this thing about the whole thing is just one big pile of absolute crud. It is such crap. We're trying to train his brain to process the pain so he gets used to it. Oh, okay. I got to work on that. I'll start bashing my head against the wall and see how my brain does with that. It really is. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And so much of it is a contradiction, too, when I think about it. I mean, you haven't, going back, but that Brady 6 documentary, you know, he cries on the thing. In the Under Armour commercials, he's got a shirt that says 199 because he's picked 199 on it, and that's only from like a year or two ago. But you're not motivated by any of this
of course.
Kind of stuff?
Please. You know? He keeps the Deflategate letter in the binder. What's that? Oh, the only motivation comes from within. Shut up. Like, it's just, it's, so maybe that's like part of the backlash. It's just not relatable. Like, it's just not, he's just not acknowledging his human, those human emotions.
Learn the power of you.
Andrew.
Find your warrior spirit.
Andrew in New Hampshire on the Pats. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So, hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Andrew. Go ahead, please.
Okay. So about the whole, when I talked to Felger, when I talked to you and Rochi a couple weeks ago, we talked about the whole James Harrison signing, and you were pretty, you were pretty heated about it. Bill's praise, you know, he's stepping up to the game, so I think there needs to be credit where there's due.
Okay, I said he played a good game the other day.
Okay.
There it is, he played a good game the other day. He's also a piece of garbage. He's one of the worst guys in the league. You hate him. You hated him all the way up until the time he put on a Patriots uniforms, but now you like him. That was my only point with Rochie. I never talked about what he was going to do on the field. And what he did on the field, he showed up last game. He's a factor. In those passing situations, he's a factor.
But you knew he would help them because their linebacking core is so wretched.
Well, no, but not every guy, Kenny Britt hasn't helped him. Michael Floyd didn't help him. Like, not every retread they sign works out. Some do. And maybe this guy will. That doesn't mean I like him.
No, but that's a separate question.
And this is but that was my issue with James Harrison from day one. And why I got on Rochie, because Rochie's a good guy and he's a moralist. He's good people who likes good people. He does. That's important to him. He likes good people and he's a good person himself. And he wouldn't touch James Harrison as a 10-foot pole a person.
Okay, but most people separate, right? Most people separate. And I'm not saying you should.
But not when he's on the other team. When Harrison's on the Steelers, I hear all about his garbage, about what a bad person he is. As soon as he comes here, now you have to separate it.
See, my issue with Harrison when they signed him was it showed you how desperate they were. We know he's a dirtbag, like that part of it. And then on top of it, what bugs me too is the idea that somehow the Patriots are above it all. That whole Patriot way bull crap, no a-holes.
Yeah, I think that's gone out the window a long, long time ago.
Okay, but people still shove it down your throat. The Patriot way crap.
Not like, really. I don't hear that much anymore.
It's still out there.
I mean, it's impossible to do when you sign James Harrison. When you sign James Harrison, you've officially relinquished your right to say that, you know, the name on the front of the jerseys is more important than the name on the back of the jersey, whatever that nonsense is. You've relinquished the right to give me that line when you sign James Harrison. So, yeah, he had a good game for you. And again, an obvious passing situation. It looks like he's going to be a factor. Congratulations. Chris in Wilmington on those Philly fans. Hi, Chris.
Am I on?
You're on.
Hi, Felger, Maz, and Murray. I'm actually a Cowboys fan. I just want to start that one out. I heard you guys talking about different fans. I am a Cowboys. I've been a Cowboys fan my whole entire life. I actually live next to Tony Dorsett's aunt and uncle.
I don't want this. I'm sorry I even brought it up because I know it turns into story time. It turns into story time. I once was in Philly, and this guy did that. And I once was this, and then the Philly guy did that. I'm a Cowboys fan, but my brother's really an Eagles fan. We're not doing that. We're not going to do that. You can do story time elsewhere. I don't want to hear your story. I'm sorry I told you mine. It was a mistake. I'm sorry I set that precedent. We're not doing that. I don't want to hear about the time you went to Philly. I don't.
Take the guy on line one who wants to talk about backup quarterbacks.
No, okay. This is the other one I was trying to avoid. Dan in Maine.
It's a trivia show now.
Go ahead, Dan. What do you got?
Hey, well, you know, I got one guy. He was the original Jimmy G. He didn't win it because you're right. The only one that ever did win it was Hostetler is Vince Ferragamo. He was the backup to Pat Hayden, who broke his hand or his pinky in 79 and ran off 5 straight wins and ended up taking him to the Super Bowl against the Steelers and blew up.
Very good. So, very good. See, there's backups that have gotten there. How many backups have won the thing?
No, it's good. They should ask that on the Mad Dog Trivia Show. And I said, yeah.
How many quarterbacks have taken the team to the Super Bowl and won it, huh?
Mike in Danvers, hi.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Mike, I want you to explain something to me. How are you sitting here today?
Sitting here today, Jimmy, sitting.
Nick Foles actually has a chance. When you thought Ben Roethlisberger couldn't beat him. I mean, they beat Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has the best offense in the league. How is Philly going to beat them? Explain that to me.
Have you been listening? So what, you think I'm giving the Eagles a chance? That's your impression of what I've been saying today?
You're talking up Nick Foles. Like, you're talking up the guy like he can actually beat him.
Have you been listening to us today or to someone else? You just like switched on to us, you don't even know.
All day, every day. All right? I mean, a couple weeks ago, you said that Pittsburgh couldn't beat him. Pittsburgh has the best offense in the league. And they beat Pittsburgh. How is Philly going to beat them?
I've sort of been asking the same thing. So I do think you have me confused. You must.
Don't engage your callers.
Just, yeah, move away from the
seriously, I told you that.
Your own advice.
I've seen them lose to bad quarterbacks. I haven't seen them lose to many bad coaches. So this is my point.
Yeah, but that's an endorsement of Foles. You're saying he's better than Roethlisberger.
In fact, we've spent all day talking about guys like Nick Foles have basically never won the Super Bowl. There's only one guy that you can say that, like Nick Foles, is one, and that's Jeff Hostetler. In the 52-year history of the game, there's only been one real true backup who's been inserted late in the year and won the championship. So we've spent all day talking about how it's not going to happen for Nick Foles, which, again, I think you have me confused, but that's okay.
That Philly defense has got to keep Brady in the 20s in this game, because I don't think they're getting into the 30s, the Eagles, with Foles. They might get into the 20s, but they're not getting into the 30s.
I mean, it's really, the whole backup thing is just, it's just it's a trivia question, because a more pertinent question is, can a bad quarterback win the game? And the answer there is yes. And I've seen a lot of bad quarterbacks who are just starters, whether it's Dilfer, whether it's Brad Johnson, whether it's Joe Flacco, who got hot, and he wasn't bad when he won it, but he's a bad quarterback overall. So there's been bad quarterbacks who won the thing. If you want to, if you're an Eagle fan and you want to say that, that's fine. And that's just sort of the backup thing is really just a trivia question. What do we got here? Jackie in Revere. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to get to players that, you know, reach, you know, 40 years old and older that, you know, still play the game and play the game good. One player, George Blanda, who I always thought, you know, what? Was awesome.
Yeah, when was that, Jackie?
It was back in the day.
Yeah, well, way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
Way back.
Yeah, it was back in the day, but still, you know, he did it, you know, and I don't see any reason why Brady can't do the same. You know?
Especially not. Just think if Blanda had Alex Guerrero rubbing him down.
Oh, my God, he'd have played till 60. He would have. And maybe Brady could become a kicker, Felger. Maybe he could do that. Because Blanda was a kicker and a quarterback.
So, again, I mean, not to slow the roll of the TB12 method, but I feel like just for fairness, just to throw some facts on the table, Brett Favre had a similar kind of year at this age. He did. His age 40, it might even be his age 41 season, I'll look it up real quick. His age 40 or 41 season.
And then he dropped through the floor.
Was, I'd argue, maybe better than this one for Brady. So it was his age 40 season in 2009. It's when he went to overtime of the NFC title game and, of course, threw a pick. But that was a year he was, his quarterback rating, you know what his quarterback rating for that year was?
I'm going to guess about 110.
107.
Close.
107. It's the only year of his 20-year career that he was over 100, and he was 107. Okay, so he had a 107 quarterback rating, which was a career high by a mile.
I think he threw like 7 picks or something that year.
He had a 68% completion percentage, which was his career high by a mile. His touchdown to interception was 33-7. Very good, Maz.
Thank you.
33-7, which I think was his best.
And well over 4,000 yards, right?
And if you care about yards, fantasy players, he threw for 4,202 yards, which was not a career high, but up there.
He was ridiculous that year.
And that was his age 40 season. At age 41, he got a little elbow thing, and that was it. Done. Dunsky. And I would furthermore, again, this is why I brought up the TB12 method, he was not training on cacao and avocado cream.
No, it was malt and barley.
Budweiser and Vicodin. Now, by that stage of his career, I don't know if he was still drinking or popping the pills, but it was then certainly chicken wings and butt heavy.
Yeah, that was the Favre method.
It was. So I really think the key to Brady, the number one key, is a gift from God. It's genetic, like all of us. If your dad has bad knees, it tends to, you have bad knees. You know, it's just like the way it works. It's handed down. He got gifted from God or his family these amazing genes and these amazing physical traits, and that's number one. And far on the edges is Alex Guerrero and this nonsense.
Because so that's Brady in his video today getting rubbed down by Alex Guerrero.
Exactly.
So this is another category we can add to the Jeopardy board here in the
this
second
is
part
what,
of the show.
Me reading those Favre stats. That's what that was like.
So we got 40-year-old success stories for 200. We got backup quarterbacks for 400. We got other coaches' stupidity for 600.
And we're not doing your story when you went to Philly.
Right. And Philadelphia stories for 1,000. That's what we got on the board today.
Which you don't get.
That's good. That's just pisser.
Final word comes your way next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No one says it like they do. Like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you, nuts?
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there's only one place to go. Town Fair Tire, best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
Nobody. So in getting into the flaws of Eagles head coach Doug Peterson today, we found out from a caller that Doug's biggest Achilles heel might be, well, this.
Tom in Charlton probably thinks he's not going to succeed. Why, Tom?
There's an NFL Films mic'd up Doug Peterson from Week 8 against the San Francisco 49ers that exposes Doug Peterson as a high-fiver, a hugger, and a clapper.
No, he claps. Over. He claps at his players?
3 seconds into the video, he's clapping.
Oh, clappers have no shot. To me, it's a line of demarcation. You can get away with it in college. Patino, Nick Saban, they're clappers. You can clap at the kids when they're 18 and you have them on scholarship. You can't clap at grown men. He claps, huh? I got to see this. So I'm sorry, Tom. Say what game was it again?
Week 8, he said, I think.
Okay, we got to find this. Oh, the clappers I hate. Let's go, guys. Good job, guys. It's okay. You know, quarterback throws an interception. You see Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett's a big clapper. Romo throws an interception or Prescott throws an interception and just killed him. Just destroyed the team, you know. Some stupid throw. Walking off the sidelines. Jason Garrett. It's okay. It's okay. We'll get it back. But don't clap in my face, man. Oh, the clappers have no shot. This guy's a clapper? Forget about it. So true. I hate the clappers.
No grown man wants to be clapped at.
Don't clap at me.
No.
No clapping.
But the only acceptable clapping is from like an old Italian grandmother. Like, get out of the kitchen. Come on, I'm trying to, you know, something like that. But from another grown-ass man or a coach, please.
No. I mean, this is the NFL. I mean, you want to clap, applaud like a, that was a good play, all right, fine. But there's clapping at players. And you know, like the real clapper, the clapper has.
It's a rapid clap.
And he knows how to clean. He has a cupped hand. He's so used to it, like, you know, like
a little more beef into it.
So there's a cupped hand, and it's a hand over clap, and it's like they clap so much, it's like, oh, those guys suck. They all suck.
It's a little bit of a delicate clap here.
They all suck.
We also touched on some of the sound from the first episode of Tom vs. Time.
This is
actually
good.
One particular scene featuring Tom Brady and his wife Giselle.
We're not in sync yet. You don't know each other. It's like building a relationship the first time you meet somebody. You're not going to be their best friend. You know, it takes time,
you know,
to get to know people. They're going to get to know you, your looks, and the way you play, and the way you do things, you know? And you're going to get to know them. It's going to be awesome. I knew it. Okay?
There's two immediately great things right there. One, you notice there's no reciprocation from Tom as she's yammering away, because as we all know, we've been there. You come home, you vent about a bad day. We've all been there, fellas. Mike, Tony, you vent about a bad day, and then all of a sudden,
all right, don't tell me how to do my job. I just wanted to get it off my chest. What are you going to tell me next? How to look off a safety? Gee.
And then you hear the car accelerate because you know he's like, oh, is she going to stop with this? You have to build these relationships with these new players, Tommy. Brandon and Dwayne. I know you don't like Dwayne Allen. He had that throw a pass in this game. You have to start building the steps of germinating a relationship. Then you have to find out what motivates these men. You have to build the seeds of the relationship. You have to plant it. You have to allow it to germinate. Just like a plant, Tommy. We have bought the children the plants before you put the seeds in. You see how they...
Shut up. Shut up about relationships. We had a bad game. These guys suck. I'll figure it out.
You have to build your relationships, Tom. Maybe we have them over for dinner. Why don't you invite Brandon Cooks and someone over? Have Dwayne Allen over as well.
Shut up.
We've all been there.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.